3, 2, 1, go!
Welcome back, everybody, to the Triad of the Force podcast, a podcast from three Puerto Rican friends coming together to do deep dives into Star Wars and other nerd-related media. These are our Cassian Fridays, where we talk about every episode of Andor. Today, focusing on episode 12, Rick's Road, and what a finale that was to season one. Oh, my God. But before we get into it, let's introduce our guest for today. Welcome back again, Tori Fox. We love you.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. I realized this morning we started Andor together.
Yep.
We're ending Andor together. Beautiful, poetic.
Full circle. I love it.
It's like poetry. It rhymes.
It's gorgeous. I love it.
We are living in George's world.
We are.
So we are defined by the rules that he has established. So thank you so much for joining us. Before we get going, obviously, today's Friday, but yesterday was Thanksgiving. So happy Thanksgiving to everyone who celebrates. Happy Life Day to everyone that obviously celebrates. If you're listening to this channel, you necessarily celebrate. And yeah, like before we get going, like it's really exciting week, not just because it was a short week in which we only got to work or pretend to work 3 days before the holiday vacation. But like the Star Wars official Twitter account was like, you know, recommending a couple of, you know, podcasts for your Andor recaps. And one of those little podcasts happened to be ours, which was a little mind blowing thing. It's like, I don't know who's behind that Star Wars Twitter account, but thank you.
And then they have very appreciative.
Good taste.
They have fantastic taste. Fantastic taste for the most part, anyway. You gotta get a dig in there. And then like the Apple podcast, the official Apple podcast app also had us there on the, what's it called, Nani? What was
the popped picks.
And we were there with Blast Points and Sky Talkers, What the Force, and a couple of other really cool people. So it's kind of wild. I don't know what to say. Just that I'm very, very, very thankful. Everything that
holidays
has happened. This whole Andor thing has been an incredible experience from start to finish. Because we started out with a bang with the premiere over that Hollywood, and now we're ending it with a bang in Thanksgiving with like these recommendations and the episode. So very, very blessed. Very, very fortunate. Very, very thankful. So thankful for everything that's happened to us. Thankful for everyone that has been supporting the channel thus far, and thankful for you, Tori, joining us and being here at the end of the journey
and the finale of season one.
I'm thankful to be here. I'm so honored to be here. Thank you.
It was meant to be because, like you said, we started this journey together, and there's no better way to end it than together. Because that's
what a journey it was. What a show. So thankful the show got made. So thankful it was so amazing and that we got to experience this and that there's more to come. Season two. Can't wait.
2 years. 2 years, though. That's a long time to wait.
I know.
I'm sad about that.
Just like Tony, you should have started that filming schedule a little earlier, my bro. You should have known that we would want more Andor immediately.
Yeah.
No, but I remember that Bad Batch, right? In a month and some change, 6 weeks, something like that. So no Diego Luna in that one that we know of. Who knows? He might do. Who knows? It just came into my mind. I'm sorry. Do not put that in the gossip.
I'm gonna be like thinking about how this could be a thing.
It's like
that could work.
What does
how can we get this to work?
How do I do the math on this?
You're right. It doesn't work. Never mind. Maybe Bix. My girl Bix, carrying the torch. See, that's the thing. I'm not good with timelines, so those times just like, why wouldn't Cassian
There's
be
so
in
much
Bad
stuff
Batch?
Now you kind of have to like pause and literally do math sometimes. So
yeah,
it's not.
I'm not Star Wars explained. Who like knows everything? It's just I'm just on the ride, and I enjoy it at the moment. And after it's done, it's just like, well, it fits somehow. The world between worlds. That's the answer everyone always gives, anyway. But before we get started with Rick's Road, which I insist on calling Ferrix Road for some reason, Tori,
it's a road in Ferrix. Hey,
it is a road.
Yeah,
it works. I'm not wrong. But obviously, we saw our premiere together, and we think you liked it. We think you liked those first three episodes, but we haven't talked to you obviously for what, nine other other episodes. So, what has been your perspective of Andor so far? Has the arc structure worked for you? Like, what's, just give us your, since you know the season's over, give us your general impression.
10 out of 10, no notes. Like, I don't like, I always want Star Wars, I always want Star Wars to surprise me. And like, I think back to even seeing the first three episodes, I would have never imagined any of this. Like, yeah. It is, but it is so, so good. I mean, I just really like, I love Star Wars normally, no matter what. So like, it's not really super hard to like, please me in a general sense. You know, I have the pizza mentality, you know, it's like pizza, like even if it's like not the best pizza, like it's still pizza. I'm still having an okay time, right? So like, this is the best pizza. This is the
gourmet.
There's gold flakes on this pizza. There is, like, this pizza is gorgeous. But like, it really has been surprising in the best ways. And I think, you know, we always, like, Star Wars has always been political, right? Like, there's always that debate. No. Mm-hmm. It's always been political, but it always has. So much of this is so, it's so pointed. It's so specific on so many issues. And it's just so, so powerful. I think I cried like every episode, honestly.
Especially like these last couple of ones.
It's very emotional. It's been very impactful. It's very powerful. While also being smaller scale. I think I'm going to rant on for this, so you can cut me off at any time.
No.
But
please,
one of the coolest things for me has been when Mandalorian came out, I had a lot of friends that I worked with that were not big Star Wars fans. And that was a good entry point for them. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a good entry point because it's not super connected. At least first season was not super connected to anything else. It's just fun, good fun, which is great. But there's like a certain pride in that. I think Andor can also appeal in that way to people. Mm-hmm. And I think with Andor, it leans so specifically into certain like genres that I've been able to recommend it to people and say, look, I know maybe you're not super into Star Wars, but if you remove the Star Wars from this, like, it can be like a spy thriller for you, or like a heist or a prison break, like all of these elements that, like,
right,
I think it can be very accessible to people that are not super into Star Wars. You know, I would say obviously, you know, probably watch Rogue One. I think that makes it a lot better, but you know.
Interesting. But would you say though, now that Rogue One should now be seen after Andor, since now we have like, oh, now it's building towards that, especially with that post-credit scene, which we'll get to.
yes and no. So I'm one of the people that I like to watch things in release order. And I like that because I like being able to look back and say, oh, there's like that connection. I kind of like that after the fact point of view. And I think with Andor, one of the things, obviously, Rogue One's my favorite. I'm like, I'm sure this is going to enhance it for me. I think the beautiful thing about Star Wars is everything that comes out, it always, the context is ever changing, right? We're always getting more context on things. This has been spectacular. Him yelling, nobody's listening in Narkeon and Arcana 5, and then the end of Rogue One, you know, do you think anyone's listening? Like, I'm tearing up right now.
It's so
like,
good.
You know, like, there's so many, and they're really well done too. Like, no offense, but like, the Emperor repeating the same line, like, all right, like, that's fine, like, it's fun, sure, but like, I think these are really, really nice references that are just so beautiful, so poetic. Like, I would still watch Rogue One first, I think, because I think it's cool to now look back and have these connections.
And it kind of elevates the story too, because Cassian Andor is not the main character in Rogue One. He's just like this interesting character that you really enjoy, but he's kind of a support, right? And then now we get to go back and see his story and where he comes from. And then the connection of what it meant to the rebellion in general. And then obviously characters like Mon Mothma, Luthen, which we haven't met. And it elevates so much of a story that we already loved and grounded it. Makes us feel like we could actually be a part of it. We could fight alongside these people in Ferrix.
Absolutely.
Oh,
It's
Fight the Empire.
Absolutely. And I think even Galaxy Con, like you're bringing up like Saw and Mon and stuff like that. I think it's really cool to have seen these people in the background in so many things.
Yeah.
And then really get this like more context after the fact. Like it's so cool.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Especially with Luthen and now like recontextualize. I mean, obviously there's more to see right now with season two, but like seeing what how you were mentioning with Saw and Mon Mothma, like how they're established in Rogue One and then seeing like how they're establishing in Andor and then seeing like that missing thread of Luthen, who's like the connecting thread for all of these characters.
That's why they call him Axis.
And there's so many questions, like what?
That is the definition. but then seeing that he's missing in Rogue One, just like something must have happened there, obviously. But it makes that intrigue now into like Andor season two all the much more exciting. And I'm so glad too that like they have planned this to just be a limited amount and like this is a story, it's going to be two seasons and that's it, because it makes it leaner, you know. It's just like, well, you know, we know what story points to strengthen, we know like what to focus on, and there's not going to be like extra fat that we need to trim, because like this is what we need to do. Like there's no Game of Thrones situations here, which is like, oh, we don't know what we're doing.
Like, yeah, we have an endpoint, but then we're just going to kind of like
mess around, like, around with it. And,
It's very intentional. Yeah. It's very specific.
Yeah.
I've seen people say, and I agree with this, it's like, of course it's a show, but it's a message too at the same time.
Yeah.
Like it's a very specific.
Yeah. It's very purposeful. Mm-hmm. Every episode has its own purpose to fulfill within the show itself and by itself as well. So that's what's so good about this show, that you can just sit down and watch one episode and it works by itself. And then you can watch the whole season, which I need to do now, just watch the whole thing in a row and just appreciate all the story beats, because there's so much buildup and then climaxes and then you start again and then build it up all over again. And it's just, it's a roller coaster ride that just, I can't wait to rewatch it. I'm so excited.
Which, to that point that Nanny said, I wanted to ask you this story. Do you think, obviously, there's been a lot of back and forth discussion about the release of Andor and like whether it should have been released as, you know, like, you know, Netflix model and here's all the episodes, or if it should have been released per arc so you can have like a complete story, or the individual episodes as we got it. Do you think that there could have been a different release model for it? Do you think what we got is the way to go?
So selfishly, I really enjoy the binge model just because like I want to know.
Yeah, I know.
But I think that something that I realized specifically like during like the past 2 years with releases and stuff, I really feel like you can totally drop a whole season, sure. But I think that you miss a lot of really interesting conversation in between episodes because I feel like I watch an episode, I'm thinking about it all week. I'm stewing on it. I'm really focusing on it.
Yeah.
When you don't have that break between episodes, you're not thinking about it as much, right? Because you're just like, I got to get to the end. Cool. And like, yeah, of course you have revelations at the end of it, but I don't know. I think better conversation happens when it's released separately. But I think that it was a very good idea to release 1 through 3 together, because that to me just reads like a movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was brilliant. I thought that was great.
Yeah. Well, now now people that don't have Disney Plus can relive that movie because it's going to be released on ABC. Is it like
also genius? How are you not hooked after that? Like, I don't know.
It's like, come on, normies.
Yeah, there's no way.
Like, how are you not like, if you didn't have a Disney Plus subscription, but you have one now.
Well, and because it doesn't even just read like a movie, it's also kind of the prologue to the entire season. So it works really well together. And then once you get those going, the episode by episode really worked, because as you were saying, you keep thinking about it. And the problem with the binge model is that by the time you get to the end, you kind of forgot what happened at the beginning. So you don't appreciate the journey as much, I don't think, because you're so focused on getting to the end that you don't really get to enjoy the journey, which is the point.
It's not about good storytelling. It's about the journey.
It's about the friends we made along the way.
Absolutely.
Which I 100% agree. And I think it, in terms of a marketing perspective too, it kind of works for Disney that way, because I like to look at the trending topics on Twitter when shows come out. And yeah, when Stranger Things was coming out, it was like trending for a while before the premiere, and then the premiere it's trending, but then it just fizzles out, and like Stranger Things is like done right in the collective consciousness of social media.
Because it loses its relevance, because you watched it and one sit down and there. Then it's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, Andor was relevant the whole way through.
Thing, yep.
Mm-hmm.
Andor is there and will always be there, and because it's oh my god, love the show so much.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, Tony. I will always be now. Every time someone says climb, I'll be like, stop.
Oh my god, literally, just like words, like try.
Oh,
hey, my boy Nemec,
I'm ruined forever.
Remember this? I'm like,
remember.
Oh, Nemec.
Well,
I think this episode made me cry way more than a lot of the other ones. Yeah, I mean, ever since speech with Marva about this is love, ever since then, I've been crying like crazy. Today, this episode, I mean, the Marva just making me cry from beyond the grave. Here. Damn her for doing that to me, Marva.
I am so glad. I don't know if we're getting into that right now, but I'm so glad that happened because we had that moment with her where she was like, I'm grabbing my gun. Like, I'm not, you know, going quietly, and then it was like, oh, she passed away, and I was like, no, she has something. Like, something is like, there's something like after the fact that's happening.
Okay, let's
like,
okay,
let's get there. Into it, because
so we're done with our season one recap. So let's go into Rick's road. We're skipping all the way to Marva.
I think it's poignant right now.
It's poignant. One thing that I thought was like incredible, but what I didn't expect, right? I didn't expect there to be like a giant Luke Skywalker hologram, but like three times as big, coming out of my sweet child B2E. And then to deliver a bomb ass, I even transcribed it. I was just like, oh, this is so good. Like, this is, it's amazing. But yeah. And to be preceded with the diegetic music, right? Like the funerary march that everyone was doing.
And the anvil and everything brought together. It was such a
by the time grabber. I was just like, my boy's back. My boy's back working overtime.
Out of the tower.
Oh, we'll get to beast mode things because
whoa.
We'll get to that. Because we've been hearing like for the last couple of episodes from Tony Gilroy and Nicholas Britell that there was like a piece of music that they wrote from the beginning of the show, and they didn't want to talk about it because if they talked about it, they would kind of ruin what happens on this episode. And lo and behold, the music is the funerary march, right, that they composed for Marva. It's just like so incredible, and it ties in thematically, right, with like Andor's theme at the opening of the episode, because like that's it, like the funerary march is that opening. Yep. So that's
and then with drums toward the end, and you're like, oh, what's coming? Oh, what's coming this episode?
Oof. Which is so good, because I'm just jumping all over the place now, but it makes sense. It's like Andor's theme song is Marva's funerary procession, which ties into his final scene in the episode, right? It's like the minute he commits to the rebellion is in that moment he sees his mom's funerary speech. Frame under that music, and that becomes Andor. It's just like
Andor's theme.
Genius. It's just Tony Gilroy, you madman. Thank you.
Nicholas Britell, thank you.
Oh my god. So good. I'm gonna shut up and let you guys now talk about Marva.
So Marva, Tori, what have you thought about this character?
What
throughout?
An icon. Marva icon, Marva, Cassie, Andor. You will always be famous. Like I mean, what an incredible character, right? Mm-hmm. But that, what an ending. What an ending. And like you said, like that speech, it's so wild too, because we have like the Luthen speech, and you're like, god, this is like, it can't
the
get
best
any
speech
better than
ever
this.
Yep.
And then we have like even right before Marva, like Nemec's finally hearing the manifesto, like amazing. Like was it tyranny leaks, it breaks, like
I'll find it,
beautiful.
I'll find it.
Yeah, but yeah. Like Marva was, of course, like the grand finale, perfect, amazing, like
the empire with that tone.
If I could do it again, I would wake up early every day to fight these bastards. Oh my god. And the most obscene thing happened at that moment, that's I need to make the parenthesis, when that stupid ass Imperial kicked my boy. I was just like, whoa.
But you know what? Like,
I was like, whoa, you do not touch B2E.
I love one man, and it is Brasso.
Brasso.
Like, immediately, without missing a beat, just drop kicks that guy. Like, he's like, absolutely not. Like,
what are you doing?
But the best part about that is, I was just like, Brasso, it's just that he just uses Marva's brick. It's like, no, she's a weapon now. He just smacks the shit out of him with Marva's brick. and then goes beast mode, just yelling, is like a battle cry. And he's like, oh my God.
Yes, please.
New favorite character. I love someone more. You know, like in wrestling where they're like, it's whoever with the chair. Like in my head, I was like, it's Brasso with the brick. Like,
just yeah.
Like,
yes!
It's John Cena. I was blown up because I've always liked Brasso. He looked like a nice guy. I was just like, yeah, taking care of. Look, taking care of Cassian's mom, that's kind of cool. But after this episode, I'm like, I want
to stay with B2Emo when B2Emo didn't want to leave the house. Like, oh, Brasso.
All dapper was just like a marching band.
Yeah. But there was so much to it. And like you were saying, Tori, I was not expecting her to die off screen. Mm-hmm. So when we first saw that, which obviously started making me cry like an idiot, I was like, but this is it? I mean, she was like all into rebellion.
Right.
And then she's just going to die off camera. What? And then when you see B2 like stop and the hologram come out, I was like, oh, here we go. And then bringing everything together, because it wasn't just, you know, Nemec and Luthen, and it was also Clem, because we see that scene that he has with Cassian when he was young and about, you know, cleaning out the rust and seeing what's underneath. And then Marva as well, comparing the Empire to the darkness, that rust grows in the darkness. We've been asleep. We need to wake up. We've been asleep. Oh. And we had Ferex and we have each other and we need to wake up. And to see the impact that her words are having on everybody that's listening to it. Luthen, the jackass that gave away Andor, Bix in her through her window, Andor himself, Luthen. It's just, it's, I just got chills
thinking about it. Because then I was thinking about the chant that was happening before, Stone and Sky.
And Sky.
Stone and Sky, like the whole, everyone just chanting that before.
Yeah.
I was just like, this is, I have no idea how you write this. I don't, like, does your brain explode as you're typing it up on your computer?
It's like one of those things in like real life where you're like, you can't write this. It's like, how, like literally how did someone write this? It's so good.
And there's so much tension and buildup throughout the entire episode. It was not at all what I was expecting to happen in this episode, but it surpassed every single expectation. Like you were saying, how do you sit down? And there's so many obvious ways for this episode to happen. And then they went completely the other direction and surprised me, you know, in a way that just, I was crying almost the entire episode and getting chills and being like, my heartbeat just climbing throughout the whole thing because the pacing was so incredibly well done. And I was so sad when like the credits rolled. I was like, oh.
Right. Because I'm just like, what's going to happen? Is he going to kill him? I was like, no, he's not going to kill him. He's
I'm just so glad that he like they made it out.
I know.
Because I was like really afraid of being hurt this episode. And generally, I mean, clearly still crying like a baby. But
yeah. But I was pretty sure Luthen like, wasn't going to make it and Bix wasn't. And
right.
Especially B2Emo. I was just like, my boy better. Because I was just like, wait, did Marva rig B2 to be like a bomb? And like when the speech is over, he's going to blow up. I was just like, that'll be cool, but like, I don't want him to go.
She wouldn't do that to her baby.
She wouldn't do that to her baby. Mama Marva, I just want Marva back. I was just like, oh, stop.
Cassian.
You always say that. I was like, stop. Stop making me cry. You're a robot.
You always come through.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah.
But one thing I did notice, they didn't bring his charging pod. So like, I don't know like how he's going to recharge himself. I don't know if they need to stop at space. Apple Store or something.
We're very concerned.
Tony, I need answers. Tony.
Bix is a mechanical genius. She'll figure it out.
He probably does inductive charging. So maybe if they have like, they put a couple iPhone chargers together.
Look,
we can charge.
So Brasso's going to do whatever for that little droid baby. So he will find something.
We know. Agreed. Yeah. We know he's Papa Bear. And we know he looks like a Papa Bear. Now we know that he protects like Papa Bear. So. Because he went full beast mode. I was just like, holy crap, I want to be his friend. He will protect me in high school. another person that went beast mode that I thought was also going to get got was the time grappler. That scene when we were there at the
when
fight.
When he was like, go get him, I was like, please,
I was
no.
Like, oh, no. No, because I think they kind of like show like some like tank or something. I'm like, no, don't shoot. Don't shoot Mike. No, don't shoot him. Don't he's just doing his job. He's just belling. He's belling that, tolling that bell. So he's just doing his job, man. And all of a sudden, I did think that he was gonna go with the hammers to take our enemy down.
I think
down,
the cake was so
good. Way better, man. Just heated it right off.
He was like 300 with the gel. I was just like, okay.
Because the hammers are his instrument, not his weapon.
True. Well,
he wasn't gonna sully it on a stormtrooper.
I like that.
The stormtrooper did not deserve it.
No. Oh my God.
This is such a weird note. this is not really, this is purely just visual note, but mm-hmm. I noticed this episode because I don't feel, and maybe it hasn't, I just didn't notice. I didn't feel like we ever had like a really good close-up on his little thing that he hits. Is it Beskar? It kind of looks like Beskar because of the patterning on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, because of the pattern, the swirls on the anvil.
I wonder if it's Beskar. Yeah.
That was
Tony Gilroy. Tony Gilroy, like, let us know. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one to ask Pablo Hidalgo on Hive Social because he's been answering questions there. So, oh, by the way, everyone, if Twitter collapses, we're on Hive Social. So follow us there. Pretty good. Tori's already the queen of Hive.
I don't know about that.
Every single post is just a home run there. So good job.
Oh,
good
you
job
are
there.
So sweet. Thank you.
I call it how I see it.
Credit where credit's due.
Credit where credit's due. And Pablo, there's a ask feature on Hive Social, and like Pablo Hidalgo has been quite diligently answering. Well, hopefully people don't, you know, abuse
don't ruin
it
for us, please.
Exactly. Don't do what you did on Twitter to him. Just be please. Cool. So far, it's really cool. It's very positive. So let's keep that environment going. So, well, that's the next one. Pablo, is the anvil made of Beskar? Because if the answer is yes, it's just mind melting.
Oh yeah.
Oh wow.
But how would they have gotten it? Because the Beskar is only like in Mandalore, right? As far as I'm aware.
Point, but I guess like my point of view on it is like, I don't know, I guess a bunch of things can happen because like the ones you see in The Mandalorian are, and again, it totally could be a different kind of metal, but just the patterning on it kind of made me feel like, kind of reminded me of like
the
how
wavy,
it looks. Yeah, the like Damascus patterning. Like it almost looks like that patterning, but it was kind of like obviously like worn away more and stuff. So I guess the way I feel is like, you know, they talk about dealing with the Empire and like she's talking about, you know, we make their ships run, like blah blah blah. So maybe maybe that
we
was
kept the commercial lanes open
or something, or I don't know.
I like it. Maybe the time grappler
maybe
was
it's
a
like
Mandalorian.
Super old.
Yeah. And nobody really knows what it is. And they just used it as, you know, their bell. But they don't really
there.
Know what
and
the
that's why
is.
Star Wars is fun because we can look at a thing and be like, what is this from?
Make your own head canon and then just roll with it until someone says it's something else. It's like, God damn it, I was thinking about that for 10 years and now it's not. Yeah. But we just have to be respectful if that happens because, hey, it's fine. The world's not.
Yeah. Fine. When we're wrong, we're wrong. It's all good.
When we're wrong. Oh my God, we're wrong all the time here. But the time grappler, you know, going all Leonidas 300. This is Sparta. This is Ferrix, I guess. Dropping a stormtrooper as one should, because I know some people say don't punch a Nazi. I'm just like, yes, we went to war with those guys. We did much worse to them, I guess, at war. So punching them is a necessity. And if the time grappler
and
embraces
with bricks and knocking them off towers,
it's all game because Star Wars is teaching us some lessons about how to deal with fascism and the right wing in these volatile political times. So I'm taking notes, Tony. I'm going to get a brick and, you know, keeping it in my back pocket.
I'm putting my will now. I hope my remains are put in a brick and smacks across a fascist's face. I'm ready. This is what I want.
it's just like a brick gun instead of just like blasters. It's just like you're just shooting bricks at everybody.
Bricks, smacking bricks.
Hopefully they're hopefully all the bricks don't have someone's remains in them because that'll be very morbid if you have like a machine gun full of like
correct.
Dead people bricks. But anyway.
Correct.
Anyway, that went on a weird tangent. Something that I did think that was really cool about the rebellion, though, at Rick's Road, not Ferrix Road, even though I'm still right by saying Ferrix Road, was that Cassian didn't participate in the riot, which I think was very poignant because you'd think, well, it's Cassian's show, right? So he should be like in the forefront of everything. But I think it made a lot of sense for him not to fight during that, not just because he's on the run, but also thematically, right? Because he's still not in the fight. He's still like outside of it. He's still like
he's gotta make
reckoning
that, like,
with everything.
Final decision. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So this whole thing was about him obviously just going to see his mom's funeral, and all of a sudden it became this call to arms again. Because I was likening it to I don't know if it was something Filoni said about Vader, because they were talking about Twilight of the Apprentice when Ahsoka's trying to reach Darth Vader and like she breaks the mask and sees Anakin and she's like, "Oh, I'm gonna try to bring you back to the light." But then she fails, right? And Filoni was saying about that moment, she's like, yeah, she might have been his apprentice and something like close to family for Anakin, but she wasn't the person that could bring him back. It was Luke in Return of the Jedi had to be his son. So in a sense, that's what's happening to Cassian, right? Like we're seeing Kino Loy, we're seeing, oh my God, I'm forgetting everyone's name. We're seeing Kino, we're seeing Luthen, we're seeing obviously him reading Nemec's Manifesto. Nemec. And all of those things are kind of pushing him, but he's still not there saying like, oh, rebellion. It's not until like Marva is saying like, hey, dude, let's do this. You've been sleeping. It's time. I love you, but it's time to kick some ass. And he's just like that, you know, the switch flicks in his mind. She's like, oh, I'm committed now. It's just like, because she's the one that made me see that like I'm my life is better served fighting for this cause that we've both believed in, right? Because they both believed in that cause, but he's not committed to fighting for it like she was. So until that moment at the end when he's like, okay, I saved all my loved ones finally. I stopped running from them. Now I can go and commit myself.
Well, and it has so much to do also with the message that Marva left for him with Brasso. And especially when she says something about he knows everything he needs to know and he feels everything he needs to feel. And when both those things come together, he will be a force to be reckoned with. And it's her recognizing how powerful he could become if he only, you know, decided to become the person that he truly is. And to hear that Marva still felt that way because he felt so guilt-ridden that the last time they'd seen each other, they were arguing and he felt guilty that he left her behind. And to hear that she stayed because she needed to stay and that it wasn't his fault. And that, what was it? She would love him more than all the wrongs he could ever do.
please.
Marva with the truth bombs and all of the emotions. But I think it was very important for him to hear that, and especially from this best friend who's like a brother who cared about Marva just as much, who could have been mad at him because he abandoned her, quote unquote, but that just wasn't the case because Marva did not feel that way. And then to hear, after those words that were meant just for him, to hear her message to Ferrix and to everybody that wishes to rebel, it just tied everything so incredibly well that you could be in this journey with Cassian and kind of understand how he got from episode one to here. And then we'll miss that chunk of time between, you know, now and Rogue One, but we'll get that in season two. So he still has a long way to go because he finally accepted that he wants to be a part of it. Take me in or kill me, but he still has to become the spy,
the man we know.
Yep.
It's interesting. Think about Nemec's speech and how he's kind of talking about like it's all the little things, right?
Yeah,
it's all the little things, and they build and they
freedom
build,
is build. An and idea. So
this whole season has been all of those little things for Cassian.
Yeah,
and then we're finally at the point where it's like, okay, I'm making the decision now.
I'm just getting goosebumps. Everyone saying those things, they're like, "Oh my god, how?" Like, this show is making me feel.
There
so
wasn't a single line wasted in this show.
No, not a single one.
Mm-hmm. Everything was poignant. It's just like this. This is engineered, designed to just like hit the right chord in every single moment. Which kudos to them, man. Because I'm just like, I was thinking that this is we've always been talking about all these shows like Mando and Obi-Wan and Book of Boba, like, you know, reviewing them as Star Wars shows. And yeah, we can also like compare them to other media that have been going on simultaneously. But I think, and I don't want to be part of this narrative that, oh, Andor's the only good thing in Star Wars and we'll never get anything good at that, because that's toxic stuff. But I do think that Andor on its own just can stand shoulder to shoulder to any TV show that has been out there in the last 10 years. It's that good. I mean, not just for a Star Wars show, for a show, period. It's maybe it's because of the times we're living in and how prescient it's being and how relevant it is towards the dialogue that we've been having socially and politically. But like Andor is just like a good piece of filmmaking, of media, of culture. I think it's that good. It's not just like, oh, I enjoyed that show and let's move on to the next one. It's like Marva said, it's a reckoning. And I think that Andor is really a force, a tour de force of like what we can do with storytelling because I mean, look at us with just one episode. Everyone's just like, blah, just about to ball here with all the hidden meaning of Marva's and messages to Cassie, not just in person, but through Brasso and like all obviously all the political posturing that like Namek was doing through the manifesto. But the show's just, you know, it struck a chord. It's been really, really, really special. But let's talk about Namek a little bit more. Because that's something
sweet boy Namek.
That every episode I've been like, they gotta bring it back. They've been talking about the manifesto. He got the manifesto. He hasn't read the manifesto. There's gotta be a payoff. And they set up payoff. There's gotta be something that happens to it. And we finally get it. Like Namek and in his voice, which I thought was so sweet.
I'm really glad they kept it that way. Yeah.
Tori, why don't you tell us like what was your experience when you started hearing Namek's voice and then saw that Cassian is reading the manifesto?
Oh, I was ready. I was like, thank goodness, finally. I figured we'd probably get it in the finale, right? Like that makes sense, kind of drum up the anticipation. But no, I'm so glad. I'm so, so glad. And you know, I think like you're talking about, everything is very pointed. Everything's very planned. I think it's perfect that that's what he was listening to prior to, you know, the rest of the events of that day. Mm-hmm. Like it all adds up. And that was just such a good speech.
It was such a good speech.
Such a good speech.
Someone already had it transcribed. And I'm going to say, okay, I'll save that too. It's like the more, we got four awesome speeches from the show. We got like the keynote speech. We got obviously Namek's, Marva's and Luthen's. It's like, holy crap. That's a lot of like solid speech writing. So I don't know if like Bo Willimon and Tony Gilroy should also be speech writers for some politician for like, I don't know, because like you're doing good. This is very good call to arms.
Mm-hmm. Now, and all coming from like different angles and different perspectives. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't sound like it's the same speech over and over.
Not
it's something new every
and
time.
That's amazing. Yes. And very special.
Because Luthen's is about like the self-destruction that his revenge wrecked upon his soul, right? Namek is about the hopefulness of the cause, and then Marva's about the community, right? It's about like how sometimes community does two things, right? It can strengthen you and give you that sense that community does to like do the things you need to do, but also how it can blind you, right? Because sometimes we become conformists within that circle. It's just like this is the security blanket, so to speak, like that group of people that you depended on kind of make you feel safe, so you don't need to be outward and worry about the problems outside, but sometimes that's not the right path. And like she said, we've been sleeping, I've been sleeping. And it's just like so incredibly precise and in how it's just a call to arms, not just for herself, because she's awakening, right? Maybe too late, maybe not, but then like trying to rally the community, not the individual, but the community to stand together, which for me, like really gave me flashbacks of Puerto Rico. It's like, I was thinking of all the riots that have been happening back home and all the manifestations and things like that. And it ties back to the reckoning episode with everyone with the pots and pans. Yeah. This is kind of the culmination of that. And like seeing everyone when they go to the governor's mansion to protest with the riot gear police there and all of a sudden, I'm seeing it. This is space riot gear, but like we see it all the time back home.
Seeing the riot gear was,
it's like that's real. That's not space. That's
real life.
That is real life, and it happens every day. Like not just in this country, but in places all around the world. And to see like how it's not about, and that's I think that's the great thing about Cassie, about Andor. It's not just about him and the sole hero. It's about the community. Like how we cannot do anything as an island, right? Because we're not an island. We're necessarily a social species, and we can't achieve anything by ourselves. We need to have that support, and to just see, you know, people just going ape shit with their instruments and being like, this is a weapon, and we're taking the system down. It's really cool to see that the writers were so cognizant, right, to kind of present how the struggle for like all of our rights and fights have to come from different point of views. It can't just be the one solution, because one solution is bound to fail, which I think is the thing that is the problem between Luthen, Mon Mothma, and Saw Gerrera. It's just like they're trying to like do it on their own, but like you can't do it on your own. You have to, you know, have one group. Speaking of Mon Mothma, there is something really interesting that happens in the two things that happen in the episode.
Yeah.
The conversation with Perrin in the space car, and then obviously the end scene with the introduction. So Tori, what did you think about those two scenes?
So
because obviously it's a cliffhanger, right? It's just like, oh, what?
Yeah,
is she kind of thing.
Interesting. So I think
she looks
fabulous,
by the way. Yeah.
Oh my god, every time, please. I also love, like, at the end when she popped up, I was like screaming because I was like, oh, look at those colors she's wearing.
And did you notice that Perrin and her are dressed the same but inverted?
Yeah. Oh my god. And then whoever the like wife of the crime lord guy was like, girl, your hair is so good. Anyway.
True.
But more importantly, so when I first watched it, I don't think I caught on quite to this, but when I watched it the second time, when I first watched it, I was like, oh, you know. Perrin's a scumbag. We've been new. Like, he's just like, he's
water
like,
sweat.
In my head, I was like, this could be like, that could totally be a real conversation being had.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, wait a minute. Uh-huh. She knows that guy's listening.
Yep.
She knows. So she's basically throwing Perrin under the bus. So now I feel like that ending part, like maybe we're still going through the introduction of it all, but maybe she doesn't have to go through with that with her daughter. But the problem is that I feel like her daughter's just like into it. Like her daughter and Perrin are like fine with all of this. I'm wondering if we're like too far gone at this point.
Yeah.
Like,
you've already especially the daughter, because she has like, that whole like prayer circle thing where they were like talking about this whole
disturbing.
So
like I feel like she's finally figured out like, oh, I can try and like pin this on my husband because like this is totally a believable circumstance, but maybe we're too far gone and she's still probably gonna lose her daughter like that.
Because her daughter's
like super into it.
Yeah.
She seemed really into it. And, you know, as soon as she saw like the boy, you know, you can see that she's happy about this. And she was like kind of leading her family out. Like she's found her place within her family.
Okay, Mom,
you know?
Bye.
Yeah.
Like, I'm ready to go. Like, and it's that scene was so good too, because there's such a long shot of the family unit and like parents just like looking ahead, whatevs, like the daughter's really like, I'm ready to go. And like if you look at Mon for those couple seconds, like her body language, like the way she's kind of like looking sideways, like she's so uncomfortable. That whole situation is just so sad.
It's interesting because I got a different read from Perrin though. Like I felt that he was uncomfortable, because so he was like,
oh, really? Okay, interesting.
I felt like he was just like,
whatever about it.
I felt that he was uncomfortable about it, and not necessarily maybe because of the Chandrillan tradition that they're engaging in, but maybe because like they're getting in with the loan shark. He's like, oh crap, because I do think that the gambling thing is not true. I do think that he's not gambling anymore.
Yeah, she was throwing shade towards him.
I'm absolutely sure. Yeah, like you said, Tori, that she was doing it because she knows that they're listening. So she's playing the long game now of like, okay, I'm gonna set some pieces up so I can get out of this mess, and you know, but try to save some face at least. So I do think that she's setting something up. To try to get Lita out of the thing, but also clear their name from like, oh well, we're funding the rebellion type of thing. And if Perrin's gotta be the scapegoat, I'm okay with that.
Bye.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely okay with him being the scapegoat. But it's very interesting that we're just getting so many more dimensions to the character of Mon Mothma, who we've always like put on a pedestal and assumed she's basically, you know, the perfection, the perfect ideal of a rebellion leader. And we know that she is also morally compromised, because she is making deals with this super shady mobster loan shark dude. She is willing to at least do the introduction, knowing that if the daughter's into it, she could lose her daughter because of it, and making her, you know, be a part of these of the Chandrillan traditions that she's against, that her sister's against, because she was repressed in that community. And, you know, knowing that she's willing to sacrifice her daughter, her husband, you know, her own moral integrity, just makes Mon Mothma even more interesting, because somebody who's perfect and who doesn't have to sacrifice anything is not compelling. But now we're getting so many more layers to Mon Mothma, and now we don't know what the consequences of what she just did are going to be. So season two.
But that's why I think she has to get out of the arranged marriage thing, because otherwise it taints her being like a pure leader of the rebellion, right? Like, I don't think she can be who we see in Rogue One and then obviously Return of the Jedi if she's got skeletons in her closet. So I think that obviously we're setting this up because it's more entertaining, yeah, right?
That's what redemption arcs are for.
Hurdles, but I do think that she's setting the stage up to be able to kind of clear her name, so to speak, yeah, and kind of, you know, come out of it.
The sketchiness clean. Behind, yeah.
I think it's interesting though, because like you're saying, like we've always had this like ideal of her, Ray. And in my head, I guess I never really thought about it, but I personally would have never thought she had a husband or a kid. Like I would have never thought about any of that. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting to see all of that. But talking about like the moral aspect of it, it's like, yes, like she's kind of trying to not do this, but she's already like entertained it. Like she's already so far in at this point. And mm-hmm. it's like weighing that cost of like the whole rebellion, all of the rebellion mm-hmm. and like all mm-hmm. of this cause versus like your family member. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting, but I think it's really continuing in the tradition of Rogue One, because I feel like Rogue One was at least maybe more in the live action sense, really the first time that we kind of, or the first time for me anyway, that I really thought about, like specifically with Cassian, honestly, I mean, the first couple minutes of the movie, like how you cannot have this rebellion. Like we've only seen like Leia and like, we're like leading the rebellion, like we're having a good time. Like there is some dirty stuff going down.
Yeah, not everything's squeaky clean.
You cannot have this without all of this other stuff happening too. Like it is impossible to lead this and to make these moves without like compromising your morals at some point. So it's super interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's not like we like you were saying, it's not like we saw like in the original trilogy where we're killing people, but they're faceless
people,
right?
Very romanticized view of it's everything.
It's like the black and white, and they're wearing armor, so we don't even need to see their face. We don't need to see the face of the person we're killing, so it's okay. And then Rogue One's just like, oh, shit.
Like, it's a lot messier.
And it's real people.
We gotta do some stuff up in here. But I do think that'll be something interesting to see about Cassian's evolution in season two. It's just like, how does he start in a more pure kind of way in terms of his fight in the rebellion, and then kind of become like more of this gray agent that we see ruthless. In Rogue One, or is he, or since day one he's just like, okay, I'm here to kill motherfuckers left and right.
I'm interested to see definitely how that happens for sure,
because I he might have always been this darkest, like I don't know, the way that he came up to Luthen was just like, okay, I'm ready to kill Imperials and chew some bubble gum, and I'm all out of bubble gum. I don't know. He did not look like he was doing well when he was in Luthen's ship. What do you guys think is going to be Cassian's evolution in season two? Is he going to be kind of a pure knight starting it, or is he going to be like our, you know, ambivalent agent that we see in the beginning?
I think he's probably going to be not quite like you're saying, like Mr. White Knight. Like, I don't know about that. Mm-hmm. I think he's coming off the heels of his mother's passed away. He just saw everything that happened in Ferrix. I feel like we've barely had time to process Narkeena 5. Like that in itself, like traumatizing, awful experience. Like I think that's the stuff that's going to be in his head going into this. I think he's totally going to be ready to do whatever Luthen asks. Mm-hmm. Like if it's like killing someone, like I don't think he's going to think twice. I mean, he shot that stormtrooper in the chest, or Imperial, whatever it was. Like when he was in the hotel.
No hesitation.
He did that real quick. I said, okay.
In a die, I was like, damn.
And boy, I mean, that's what skills. You have to do. Like, no judgment, but like that he was very quick to do that. So I feel like he's going to be like, no problem.
I see that. And it's such a dichotomy, especially because now you have the privilege of meeting Diego Luna. He's such a wonderfully nice person. And to see him be just a ruthless assassin, it's just like, oh my God, what a good actor. Give that man an Emmy.
I will say, though, I don't think that goes without a cost. I think it will still personally affect him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I do think that he'll be able to do it.
Affect him how?
Well, because he's all in, clearly, but he's still idealistic, because he has made this decision based on, you know, the messages that he got from Marva and the messages that he got from the manifesto. So even though I think he has accepted that there's dark deeds that need to be done, he's still very idealistic about it. But throughout the years, and it's the Andor that we meet at the beginning of Rogue One, that he's been very disenchanted with the rebellion.
It wears away at you.
Because I think there comes a point that there's just too many sacrifices, which is what's happened to Luthen as well. Like, he still believes in the rebellion, but he believes himself damned. So I think Yes. It's we're going to see that chip away at Andor's soul during season two, at the point that we meet him then in Rogue One. And through Rogue One, he eventually finds that idealism in again. And he is a fulfilled person when he does make that ultimate sacrifice at the end of Rogue One. So I think we're going to see a lot of transitions here for the character.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Thank you. I try.
You succeed. You succeed. Can't wait for a season two, goddammit. Let's do some mild speculation, unless anyone has something else to say about it.
Well, let's talk a little bit of what's gonna happen with Deirdre and
right. Thank you. There we go.
Deirdre and Jesus. Cyril have the strangest relationship mm-hmm. going right now, and now he saved her life, so she's gonna feel indebted to him, and he's kind of a creepy stalker that now saved mm-hmm. her. You know, it's strange. Their interactions
all bad.
Incredibly well acted, but
oh yes.
I did. I'm not gonna lie. I did get some satisfaction when I saw that scene when someone just, I don't know what it was, a rock or something, just smacks her.
Oh,
in the
head. It was like, so good.
And she loses her blaster, and she's getting dragged through the sand.
Around. That was.
Yeah. I was like, well, that was good. That's fuck around and find out. That was territory. But yeah, Tori, what do you think about that? What do you think of Cyril and Deirdre?
If I had to pick something like I'm least invested in, it's probably them. I'm being honest. They are just, but like, obviously still invested because it's a great show. But like, the vibes are awful. Like, they are just,
they're so strange.
So awful. And so, like, them together, and yeah, like him saving her life. Again, like you said, incredibly well acted.
Yeah.
But like, he, like you said, he's obviously like a stalker creep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very uncomfortable. He's like relentless. And so obviously I'm sure at this point now it's like they team up at some point now because he saved her life and all of this. I'll be interested to see what's next for her. I mean, I assume she'll probably be still part of the ISB and it'll maybe be like her hunting further for him. Or maybe they cut her loose because of the events. I don't really know. And maybe they both go rogue. I have no idea. I have no idea what to expect from them. I think it could go either way.
I think they might let her go because it's a failure. You know, the ISB don't take no excuse. So it's just like, hey, what the hell? You were just supposed to watch over a funerary procession, and then like you mm-hmm. lost control of this, and how many troopers died on your watch and all that stuff.
She's already at odds with so many people.
Yeah,
back at the office.
Back at the office.
But it is kind of crazy that both of them had, you know, their greatest, you know, work failure happen on Ferrix.
Incredible.
You know, it'll bring them together in their creepiness. They really got to give you a
you don't mess with the community.
But I mean, clearly, you know, she's a bad person because of all the torture and everything, but she is good at her job. You know, she's one of the most effective agents in the ISB. Right. And mm-hmm. she tries so hard to get them to listen to her. But I don't know if it's because she's a woman or because she's one of the younger ones or because she's one of the newer recruits. But she constantly keeps saying, stop killing people. Killing people will not get you any information. Stop doing it these ways. She's the first one that made the connection to all the stolen things probably being part of a bigger game, you know? And she keeps trying to warn the Empire that this is coming, that rebellion mm-hmm. is happening, and nobody listens to her. So it'll be interesting what she decides to do now, because clearly her work method doesn't work within the Empire, not in the way that she wished. So who knows?
No, I think you're right. I think it's a combination of everything. She's a woman, she's younger, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But you're right. She's like probably the most competent one who is really having mm-hmm. like, who's really following the paper trails, following all mm-hmm. of this. And yeah, that also feels very real world, for being honest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Particularly with Cyril and his mom, because then it's just like, is she gonna move in with Cyril's mom and like and they can like have like a work office there to figure out like
honestly like her next. And Cyril's mom conversation, that would be very interesting.
They would be burning Cyril all the time. So it's like he isn't
coming. Yeah, they're both just roasting him. That's so true. Wow,
it would be horrible just eating cereal looking at him.
I hope we see more of Edie. Where is she? It's been like a whole episode. I'm upset.
She was fantastic.
Everyone's coming. I think everyone's gonna come back for season two. So we'll need to see. But it's how does she fit in season two now? Because I do see that like Cyril and Deirdre, I just have like mixed feelings about the whole Cyril and Dedra thing, because yes, I think he is obsessed with her. I don't necessarily even think that it's romantic. I mean, maybe in his head, like, he mixes those things up because it's like he's an incel, right? So for him, it's just like, well, the first pretty girl that looks at me, and like, I don't know how to feel about this. But then with her, it's just like, I don't know, it'll be like a Stockholm syndrome thing where it's like, oh, he saved me, so now like I'm indebted type of like toxic relationship. But I don't know, a lot of people are like talking about like the romantic element between them. I'm just like, I don't know if that's the case. Like it's
because
it's toxic in both directions.
Yeah,
right. So like, so I don't know. I know
no matter there was, what we're looking at, it's not great.
It is not.
No, it's not. It's good.
Not good. And I know there was like a lot of theorizing that one of them, if not both, would like, because you know it's a Star Wars trope. If you're in the Empire, maybe you'll turn and you're like switch. A protagonist in a show, mm-hmm. and you'll switch sides. But so far that hasn't happened. Do we think that there's still an opportunity for either of them to switch to the light in season two?
I feel so. Part of me is like, they're so far gone, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Like they are so far gone. I think it could still happen. I think it could still be interesting, but I also feel like the show has constantly been doing things that we do not like. I think that expect, that might be like an easy, that's an easy, like you said, easy regular Star Wars thing. Happens all the time. Maybe we don't go that route because I feel like we're focusing on other things here.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's so interesting to see, because their whole story is something that would compared to other kind of like tropes or circumstances that happen often in Star Wars. Theirs is a lot about like the Empire eating them from the inside. Like right, it's right, also right, killing right. them in its own way. Like being a part of fascism is also clearly awful for you. So I almost want to see more of that story.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose anything's possible.
And that's a good point. That's a good point. It's like, as we see the destruct, like how the Empire / fascism destroys from two perspectives, from them from the inside, how it just destroys you and corrupts you, and the other side's outward, right? It's like how it oppresses you and like puts
either way,
on sure. your face. So that's an interesting point.
Yeah.
But for season two,
and maybe if she doesn't get fired from the ISB, maybe she'll bring him over.
Oh, and then she sure will.
She'll have an ally from within, and then maybe try to subvert the system from within the ISB, even though for their own gains, because they're both clearly selfish and power hungry.
Right.
So, yeah. Maybe she has a moment where she's like, you know what? They don't appreciate me. They don't get it. Fine.
But maybe it'll be exactly something like that, but it'll be kind of like General Hux, right? In Rise of Skywalker, where she's like, yeah, he's the spy. But he's not doing it to help the resistance. He's doing it to take down Kylo Ren. So maybe it's a type of thing like that. She's gonna start to try to take down the Empire, but not to help the rebellion. It's just like to take
just
them
to set up herself in a position of power.
So she's still being selfish, right? And so it'll eventually lead to her destruction. Because that's Star Wars, right? Selfishness and selflessness. And if she's still fighting for the wrong reason, she's still being selfish about it. But maybe that's it. Maybe she gets demoted and she's like, what the hell? I'm not gonna be demoted. You know how hard I've worked to like be where I'm at. And Cyril, I don't like Cyril. I'm sorry. I don't know how some people like him. He's just,
I don't like him either. I can't.
I've met so many people like that. I'm just like,
you know who I do like? I like his little friend. I can't remember his name.
The Scottish guy.
I like him because you see him fall in Ferrix. And then like during the commotion, he like falls over, and then it's like, you know, I don't know, 10-15 minutes later in the episode, and it's him drinking like
sitting in a corner having a drink.
I'm pretty
like,
sure
I'm out.
He like didn't move. Yeah. But I'm pretty sure he like, I have to go back, but I'm pretty sure he just like, he fell and he just like didn't move.
Yeah. And it's like, I'm out. Still sitting I'm done there.
It's like, I thought this was gonna be a good time. We're just gonna catch one dude, and all of a sudden I'm getting trampled. No.
Yeah,
maybe he'll defect. Maybe he'll be in the rebellion
that's
next season.
That's an interesting thought. You know, yeah. I mean, that's another piece of the puzzle, right? Is him? He's still out there. Is he still helping Cyril?
And like, we don't really know his motivations. Like, he's just he was a bootlicker, right? Like in that first arc. Now he just popped up, and like you said, now he seems a little disenfranchised by getting trampled by a crowd. So maybe he's like, well, maybe this is not cool. Maybe I should like that meme. Are we the baddies? Maybe he had that self-realization.
Like, am I the bad guy?
Am I on the wrong side?
Am I the villain?
Like they were just like killing people that were at a funeral. Maybe they're the bad guys. It's like, yeah, put it in perspective. Like the Empire is shooting down people at a funeral. It's not even like they weren't even rioting. They were at a funeral. And all of a sudden, like they kicked the biggest sin of all. They kicked my boy B2 Emo. And then they started killing.
And the whole town said, wait a minute.
Hold on.
We didn't talk about I don't remember the guy's name, but the son.
Who creates the bomb, and you see him like tinkering with it.
When he was throughout the episode, and like, what's he doing?
I was just like, that's a Molotov cocktail, space Molotov cocktail, which is like, kudos to him, man. It's like, you do what you gotta do. And I do like that he was like also doing it like with the hologram of Daddy-O over there. Yeah. It's like the call to actions in these episodes have been the ghosts from the past, right? So the memory of his father and the memory of Marva are the two inciting elements for those things. So like, and that was a powerful bomb. Like, good job, kid. Like, your dad taught you well.
And it said,
I'm so glad he made it out. Chain reaction. Very concerned. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Was he on the ship to get out?
He was. He's on the ship to get out with Brasso and Bix.
Who were all? Yeah, Bix, B2, Brasso, kid, and the woman.
One of the daughters of Ferrex.
Yeah, because she was the second one to scream after Brasso. And he was like, girl, let's go get her a brick too. So, oh my God. It's just. I just want to see more Andor.
I know, I'm so sad. It will never be enough.
There will never be enough. Unless we just keep watching it on repeat. Well, this is some responsible speculation. Season 2, we know what characters made it out. Tony Gilroy said that we will probably see, there'll be a 1-year time jump between the end of season 1 and season 2, and that everyone's going to be alive. No one's going to die off screen. So we do know that. He didn't promise that everyone's going to make it out. He did say that in the starting line, everyone's there.
Be concerned going in, which is nice.
Exactly. We can rest easy, my prince. So let's speculate. Obviously, I think one of the good things that are probably a given is a K2SO. So
for sure.
Are we gonna get like a Thor Love and Thunder type of thing, where like Mjolnir and Stormbreaker, had like that thing with Thor where they were jealous lovers.
Oh, what, like B2 Emo and
B2 Emo and K2 are gonna be like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
That's a beautiful. I love that.
We'll need to, because we'll see. I saw one theory that said that like K2SO was reprogrammed with B2 Emo.
I kind of a little subscribe to that theory. I think some of the sassiness is there, so I don't know.
Yeah.
That could be it. I don't know. That means he dies though.
Yeah, don't love it.
Exactly. And then dies. Climb. And she's like, stop saying climb, goddammit. I can't do the same anymore.
That too.
Which is something that at first I was just like, it's a word. It's a coincidence. It's the first time that they said climb on Andor. It's like, no, see, because in Rogue One, they said climb. And I was like, it's like, no, baby. That's a coincidence. And then it's just like, no.
It keeps happening. It's not. I hope. And think we're gonna. I think Cassian's sister's alive.
Yeah. I think so too.
I have to go back to that.
And they've already set that up, and they've talked about it. There's something more.
I think so too. I think that was a red herring with Marva being like, "Oh, don't look for her." I think she's like, "Don't look for her because there's gonna be problems there." Mm-hmm. Maybe she's an Imperial, and that's why she's like, "Oh,
or
don't,
what if
don't
she's already part of the rebellion?" Yeah.
No, but why wouldn't she want him to look for her then? Because if she were part of the rebellion, she's...
Well, do you think Marva actually knows, though? Do you think she actually knows? I feel like when she said that, she's just gone. She's gone.
Yeah, I think exactly. she just wanted him to...
It's like Obi-Wan, like, oh, your father's dead. It's just like, he's gone.
I think she just doesn't know. Because how could she know and he not know?
Because she's Marva and she's a queen. She knows.
All-knowing. I don't think she knows either. I think she was just kind of telling him, this is a fruitless effort. You're wasting your time.
He's
you're too attached.
Like,
let it go.
Endangering himself for this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think she knows.
That's the way I read it. So, but we'll see.
Story-wise, I think that just doesn't make sense for it to be like such an important plot point that, you know, kicked off the events of the show. And he
I just think Marva didn't know, but I think that something's going to happen with the sister, definitely, because as we've been talking about, the show is very purposeful in what it does. And we wouldn't have started his journey with him looking for his sister and then just leave it up in the air. I don't think that's going to happen. But I think it'd be interesting to see either way, if she's an imperialist or part of the rebellion, or she's just somewhere just living her life and gets dragged into all this mess because Andor finds her, you know.
And then just when he finds her, the Empire kills her. And then he's like, no, more
revenge. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't know if I feel like...
Either way, she's not making it out of life.
I think people could always be somewhere else, you know? I like to think that.
Having a good time. Farming, it's a peaceful life.
Maybe she does join the rebellion. Maybe she's doing something else while he's on.
Yeah, maybe she's in accounting, so she's safe. She's in an office, doesn't have to worry about getting blown up.
The rebellion accounting department, yes.
Working remote though. Perfect. She's not working at Hoth or any, you know, those dangerous locations. She's working remote.
I accept that.
Okay. Another one of my girls that I'm worried about is Bix. Because I was just like, she's not gonna make it this time, but she did. Thank God. It was just funny because I remember, like, after the ending of the first arc, we were all like, are we going to go back to Ferrix? Are we going to see Bix? Yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, we're going back and we're going to see everybody. And so it was so funny, like, all those questions back then and, like, have it all revealed to be like, oh, yeah, this is still very,
this is
very
happening.
Important. So what do we think is going to happen with Bix going forward? Do we think she's going to, like, follow Cassian into the rebellion, or is she going to be like, hey, my dude, like, I'm out. Like, that torture thing doesn't sit well with me. Because, you know, there's no therapy in space, so she's not going to be able to deal with it with, you know, professional help. But
I think it could go either way with her.
Yeah,
I will say, I feel like you could tell clearly she's still, like, really not well. And I hope that they can help her in some way, like, please. Because that was so painful.
That was so hard to watch. A strong woman like her going through that kind of torture and then seeing her so broken.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. Yes. But I feel like you could tell she was at least, like, becoming more
herself
aware.
Well, herself when they were on the ship to leave. So, like, I have hope that she will maybe be able to at least work through some of it, hopefully.
And still very confident on the whole Andor will find us, like, we are his family.
Correct.
We haven't lost him, you know. She was also listening to Marva's speech and she was, like, singing along with the music and going along with the chant, and so I think she found herself through that a lot. And I mean, it's going to be a process because she was literally tortured, so she has PTSD and a whole lot of stuff to work through. But I think with the people she's with, it's going to help. And I think these people are probably going to end up joining the rebellion because of everything that inspired them in Ferrix to rebel. I don't think they would turn back now that it started.
But do you think that we'll see Ferrix again, that they'll need to, like, come back to Ferrix to liberate it? Or do we think, like, we're done with Ferrix? Now we can finally say that, like, with season one over. So, are we done with Ferrix or are we not done with Ferrix? Because we do know that we're going to Yavin 4 finally in season 2, because obviously we're tying back into Rogue One, but you know, and we're talking about Andor's sister and, like, that threat. So, like, now we're stuffing the season. So is there still something to explore on Ferrix, or everyone's done there and they're moving on with their lives elsewhere? Because I can see Brasso being like, no, we gotta go back and liberate my other brothers down there.
That's still working. Possibly, but at the same time, I do feel like it's, like, going back there would be, like, knowing that you might not make it back out, kind of thing. Like, I feel like now it would be really dangerous to go back. I have a million questions about where they're headed, though. Where they're going? Taking that ship? I don't know.
maybe they're going. Well, they're not going to Scarif, but speaking of Scarif, we do have, like, to start wrapping this up. We do have a post-credit scene. Like, it's not what I expected at all. I thought it would be, like, a little tease of what's going to happen.
I thought someone, like, was going to show up or something.
Yeah, it's going to be Bail Organa just like, I'm back.
Yeah, like the Nick Fury moment. Like, I'm putting together a crew. Like...
I don't know what the name of the Star Wars assembled group would be, but we'll figure that out for the next episode.
We'll figure that out.
Because I was just like, I can't come up with something on the spot. So I'm not going to say something stupid. But how did you feel, like, seeing that actually what Andor was building was, in fact, little Lego pieces for the Death Star? because I wasn't expecting that.
I feel like I assumed that. And I think maybe I was, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people assume that. So it, it didn't really feel like a surprise or anything. I definitely feel like it ended it on a very depressing note for me. But I also had to talk myself through it, because I was like, this is really sad, because obviously he helped build the thing that killed him, but at the same time he also took down the thing that killed him. So, but it is, it does add another interesting layer to that whole
of bringing the whole thing full circle.
Makes it more heartbreaking and sad.
I mean, a lot of people were speculating about the materials being something for the Death Star. So that's why it didn't look surprising to me, but the the way it was shot was so incredible. Just like from the way they were setting the pieces to then like the spanning out, and then that way that it's like the satellite being pulled into the Death Star. It was such an iconic shot. Cool. It even looked almost like a lightsaber being built, you know? So
if you think about it, the Death Star is a lightsaber.
With the Death Star, you know, it's powered by kyber crystals and the whole thing. But I just remember looking at it, I was like, wow, that is such a glorious image to leave you with. It's like, oh, here we go. Okay.
And it was and reminding you of like a story at large too, right?
Because this is all part of a larger story. Like, we did it, we did boots on the ground, we make you want to feel what the people there are feeling, but it still is part of a larger story. So it kind of brought all of it together. And I think it was a very, very cool way to just end the season. You're just like, it is about the people, but yeah, they're almost done building the Death Star. And here we go.
Yeah. And it's something that I loved about Rogue One that they're obviously recapturing with Andor. It's just like the aesthetics of and the cinematography of Rogue One are so beautiful in of themselves, and like how Rogue One was able to shoot the Death Star and make it look like this beautiful object in space, you know, as opposed to A New Hope. It looks like this terrifying thing. But in Rogue One, I don't know, I've always felt like the aesthetics of it just made it look beautiful cinematically, you know, and like in the framing then in this post-credit scene is the same.
It was amazing.
Like, look at this beautiful jigsaw puzzle of terror that we're obviously leading up to, which I thought was like very interesting. Maybe Bail Organa would have been cool, like a little, you know, cape action,
a little cape twirl,
cape twirl. We'll see him in silhouette. We'll see him in silhouette, and he just like looks back and bam, cut to black. But I can only dream. Well, we will see him in season two.
Maybe next season. Maybe that'll be the next post.
Him with little. Actually, no, little Leia's not little Leia anymore. At this point, she's already Carrie Fisher. But whatever. We'll find a spot to put little Leia in. But anyway, we could be talking about Andor forever. We've already been talking about
it. Because it's that good.
12 hours, I guess. Put all the episodes together, and we will keep talking about it for more than 12. Because Kino said no more than 12. Levels, but we'll have 12 more episodes of Andor in 2024, right? Math does not exist in my brain.
So far away.
It's too far away. I know. So unfortunately, this is, I think, the end of it. I don't know if anyone else had any closing thoughts before we wrap up. So everyone can have some Thanksgiving lunch, dinner, whatever we want to call it. But other than that, I think we're done. Tori, thank you so much for joining us. Amazing conversation as always.
Thank you. I'm always so happy to hang out with you all. So thank you for having me.
Very, very, very poetic. We started this journey together.
And ended it.
Now we end it together.
Finally meeting in person.
I love
and
it.
Now.
It's been too long.
That was so magical.
But I know. Where can people find you?
You can find me at The Mandatorian on Twitter and Instagram. You can find me and on Hive too now. Hey. Like, add another thing to the mix, why not? And then you can catch Mandatorian Creed on Octo Radio,
and we will leave links down in the description below so you can follow her, because it's amazing content, pretty funny. Steal the Look, I think, is still pretty fun.
Oh yeah, you can follow Steal the Look. So like, I was getting back into it, and then it was like Twitter's dying, and I was like, do I want to keep, like, I don't know what to do, everything feels so,
the answer
in
is
limbo
yes.
Limbo right now. I know.
Whatever your options are, as long as they, as long as they involve continuing, the answer is yes.
Check out Steal the Look if you like fashion.
cosplay on the quick. But with that, I think we're done. Annie, why don't you sign us off?
We are Triad of the Force. Thank you for joining us through this journey that was Andor. Season one is over. We were incredibly excited about it. We're incredibly sad that it's over now. It's going to be a long wait, but it will be worth the wait. I guarantee that season two is going to blow our minds all over again. So you can find us whenever the podcast can be found. Just search Triad of the Force and you will find us. You can leave a comment, like, subscribe, let us know if you like us, hate us. It's all good as long as it's constructive. And until next time, may the Force be with you.